Fred Film Radio, Sydney Jewish International Film Festival, Australia.
This is Christina Palmieri for Fred Film Radio from the Jewish International Film Festival in Sydney, and I'm here with Eddie Tamir, the artistic director. Good afternoon, Eddie.
Hey, Christina. Great to see you again.
I was about to say that this is our annual catch-up.
That's right.
Because you're very generous with your time with Fred. And is your eighth...
It's like that film, Same Time Next Year.
Exactly.
Remember that film? When they have an affair just once a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for like 20 or 30 years.
Yeah, and I can't remember the actors.
But Alan Alda.
Yeah, Alan Alda, exactly. Yeah. Beautiful film,
amazing
actually.
Film.
Yeah, that's right.
Time to do a remake, maybe.
And Eddie, this is your eighth year as artistic director of GIF.
Mm-hmm.
And we have big news this year.
Yeah.
GIF has a brand new home in Sydney.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, probably need to go back a step to Melbourne.
Yeah.
And, you know, how what GIF is in Melbourne for us. And part of the evolution of GIF really is from our cinema, the classic cinema in Melbourne, in Elsternwick. And, you know, it had a history of running Jewish film festivals there for 20 years prior to us taking over the festival. And 8 years ago, we decided to take over the running of GIF, or rebranding it as GIF, the Jewish Film Festival. And the classic was the perfect home for it. It's our cinema. We know it well. It's in the middle, it's in the heart of the Jewish community of Melbourne. And it's a home. The popcorn's kosher, there's kosher wine. It's a welcoming place, it just happens to be, really a real home, not just for the festival, but so a home for the festival and for film culture in general and Jewish film culture in general.
Sure.
So we show a lot of films during the year. We have a lot of groups that come and see Jewish film during the year as well as during the festival time. We're actually next to the Holocaust Centre in Melbourne, our cinema. So many students who go to visit the Holocaust Centre come and see films at the Classic. So we're really part of the rhythm of, I guess, the Jewish film voice in Australia. And the Classic is the hub of that. You know, the Ritz, firstly, the Ritz is amazing. You know, I walk into Cinema One and I feel the awe of cinema. When I walk in there, 850 seats with a balcony, built in 1937, and I go, I actually walk in, and I've been in the cinema business for, you know, over 20 years, and I just go, wow, this is awesome.
It's the wow factor.
And this is what cinema, you know, this takes cinema to another dimension. So, yes, so we took over ownership of the Ritz 5 months ago after some negotiation. And, you know, we love it. It's amazing. Sydney loves the Ritz as well.
Yes, we do.
And we hope to evolve it over time to be a hub of film and cinema culture in general. And, of course, part of that story and mosaic is having GIF have a home at the Ritz. So we're very excited and we look forward to welcoming, you know, film lovers from all over Sydney.
That's fabulous news for us. We are really, really glad to have a new home for culture and cinema in Sydney. So let's talk about the GIF this year.
Yeah.
So I'm going to show numbers. The program features 61 films from 23 countries. And we're talking about 20 languages.
Mm-hmm.
28 features, 29 documentaries, including premieres of 3 Australian films, a selection of American indie titles, stories from the Holocaust era, and a full season screening of 3 TV series, and a couple of short films.
Yep.
We are talking about 800 screenings over 5 weeks across venues in Brisbane, Canberra, Melbourne, Perth and Sydney.
Yep.
Wow, that's a lot. We want to know more about the highlights.
Sure, sure. I think you've asked me in previous years on theme. And
yes.
I haven't really spoken much to theme because, you know, for me it's very individual in terms of it's film by film. You know, you're not looking to curate by theme or trying to fill gaps in a thematic, you know, thesis that you're trying to fulfill. But it just so happens that a couple of things, a couple of patterns come to mind from the collection of films that we have put together this year. One is The New Migrant.
Yeah.
And that crazy energy of The New Migrant. And not, yes, including migrants that have moved to new countries and new worlds because of the Holocaust, but not just. There's many stories of migrants in general from other eras and moving for other reasons, but the consistency, I think we have over 10 films that are new migrants who somehow have managed with whatever it means with that new migrant energy to do groundbreaking things in their new countries that have had impact on the world.
Yeah.
So we have films like that. So that is an amazing energy, and we love that theme, which I'll get back to in terms of specifics of film, unless you want me to talk to you about now.
Oh, up to you.
Okay, so I will just touch on...
Sure.
The opening night film tonight, I guess, is a great example of that. So Dr. Ruth Westheimer, amazing woman.
Yeah.
You know, an amazing person. Young German, you know, woman, born in the late 20s, goes through the Holocaust and ends the Second World War as an orphan. Goes via Palestine at the time, becomes a sniper in the Israeli army, crazy stuff, and then ultimately ends up via France in America, with very little English and very little education, decides to work on both those aspects, becomes a clinical therapist, studies under the great sex therapists of the time, and becomes the groundbreaking voice of, I guess, sexuality in general and dealing with that crazy topic in ways that have sort of lift the lid on suppression and repression of sexual thinking and approach to sexuality, interacts with the AIDS era of the 70s and the 80s, and develops her own radio show called Sexually Speaking, and is still working today at 91, trying to make humanity more aware and better. So along with that film, you know, just to mention a couple, I know you just had an interview with Alyssa Bolsey, who just made the film about her grandfather, Jacques Bolsey, the Swiss inventor of the Bolex camera. Again, the Bolex camera, just think about that, you know, still till today is considered an important, iconic and useful camera for expression by filmmakers, avant-garde, as well as just, you know, hobbyists.
And it's an incredible story.
Incredible story.
Yeah.
And to, you know, the Frank Lowy story, what will become of us?
Yeah.
Again, you know, what could be a bigger Sydney story
yes,
than
indeed.
Frank Lowy? Again, you know, the new migrant doing amazing things and having a huge impact on the world. The jazz record label Blue Note, invented by Alfred Wolf and Francis Lyon, the iconic jazz label, still till today considered the great, you know, New York jazz label. Again, German Jewish migrants. Pulitzer, not a survivor, talking about a 1910, 1912 American stories. You know, his story begins there and becomes one of the great tabloid newspaper publishers. And, you know, a water of prizes till today.
Yeah.
So the story of the new migrant energy, Carl Laemmle, who started Universal Studios, again, an East European migrant in the early 1900s, who started Universal Studios and made all the monster pictures that even till today we see as the great iconic films, Dracula and Wolfman, Frankenstein, and the creative force behind those. So it's a big thing.
Yeah, and as you were saying in a recent interview with the J Wire, this people manage to forge new pathways and achieve groundbreaking things in their new countries. It's interesting. I wonder, why all this energy?
Yeah. You know, I'm just thinking about myself.
Yeah.
You know, in the context of that question. And I think, you know, I'm born in Melbourne to migrants. You know, we didn't have an easy time growing, you know, in the early days. My parents struggled, came with nothing, blah, blah, blah. But I had a pretty good childhood, pretty privileged upbringing at the end of the day after they, you know, got over their, you know, initial adaptation challenges. And I'm thinking about myself so I had a pretty good journey compared to a lot of the people we're talking about. And really, if I think about just doing new things today, just starting a new venture or a new idea, even with English and with enough financial backing to be able to take risks, and it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard even with
exactly.
familiarity
yeah.
and support, emotional and financial. So whatever it is that the new migrants
yeah.
have done and still do across all cultures is incredible.
Yeah, it is absolutely incredible. And also there is a story, another story that really struck me was the one about Lia Gottlieb.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is another amazing story.
Amazing. So, yeah, so Lia Gottlieb, again, a Holocaust survivor, comes to Israel. And you wouldn't pick her as a fashion icon because when you see the film, she's quite a conservative-looking woman.
Yes.
Wearing,
she looks
pearl and twin set. And she makes the most, she made the most flamboyant swimwear on earth at the time. And in the 80s and the 90s, she was the biggest seller of fashion bathers in the world. And, you know, so her story is an incredible story of determination and creativity and adaptation.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, with that interesting dynamic of what was her family life like and what was she like with her kids.
Yeah.
Not so straightforward, not so simple. But, you know, so a lot of the stories, interestingly, deal with those questions as well.
And since we were talking about themes, I'm not sure if we should call it theme, but there is a focus on women.
Yep.
And also on true stories, which intersect with what you were saying about new migrants coming to new countries. So some stories tell us about these fabulous women with incredible courage who were able to achieve incredible things. Mm. And this intersects with the concept of a true story. Because when we were talking about the story of Ruth Westheimer, her story doesn't look real.
Mm.
It seems fantasy film because how could she have achieved what she achieved considering no English, no education when she arrived in the United States?
Mm.
So these themes are very strong in this year's program.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And and I guess because the Jewish experience is so broad in terms of the number of countries that the Jews, for various reasons, have had to go to or have chosen to go to, and back to your 20 languages introduction, it gives a real snapshot of a kind of an amazing, you know, patchwork of quilt of experience around the world, and you know, which is hopefully informative and mind expanding, and hopefully we can take inspiration from these stories.
And there is another aspect that I would like to explore with you, because it's something that is I think is a question that many people ask you. That was again in the interview I mentioned before. You are often asked why there are so many Holocaust themed films produced every year.
Yep.
And you said that, well, filmmakers choose the period to tell their stories because they resonate with contemporary racism and anti-Semitism.
Yep.
Do you think that filmmaking may have an impact on today's political and social climate?
I'm sure that the filmmakers, like, that's their aim. That's the challenge. So I guess that takes us to our closing night film.
Yes,
indeed. Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah.
And we're very privileged to have this film. This is one of the big films of the year.
Yeah.
And we're very fortunate to have the Australian premiere of this film. So Taiki Waititi, what a guy he is. So 44 years old, New Zealand director, made a couple of low budget, you know, films in New Zealand that broke out, became world hits due to his intelligence and wit and iconoclastic approach to things, I suppose. Hunt of the Wilder People, the warmest, most beautiful human, you know, storytelling with comedy and warmth that there has been, I think, in the last decade. Catapults him to Hollywood and does Thor, you know, like directs Thor after just a few independent New Zealand films, again bringing humour and humanity to a, you know, to a comic book hero. Then decides a couple of years ago to make a Holocaust era film, and using his unique sensibility, calling it an anti-hate satire. And he's not just, and in his own words, Tracy, which is, he sees the world at the moment as very problematic, having a lot of toxic issues, including the xenophobia and racism and anti-Semitism.
White supremacy.
Divisiveness, white supremacy.
Yeah,
and he's saying, I'm going to deal with that in my way, in my style, and hopefully, to your point, get a bit more love and understanding in the world and show up and magnify and spotlight the crazy extremists and hit them and their world and expose them and their mechanisms and mechanics with black comedy, with political satire, and go at it. But he chooses to go to a Holocaust story. He doesn't use a contemporary story, interestingly. And I guess, I'm not sure why. Why didn't he just make a contemporary story and look at white supremacy to deal with that? Can't answer. You have to ask Taika. It just so happens that blend of Polynesian and Jewish runs through him, which may be a key to that question. His mother is a Mrs. Cohen, and he also calls himself Taika Cohen at times. So he does have a Jewish heritage, which he obviously is connecting to, of late. And he does this provocative thing, which is not everyone's cup of tea. He connects to the zeitgeist of Charlie Chaplin's Great Dictator, to Robert Benigni's Life is Beautiful. And that's not everyone's cup of tea, dealing with horror and nightmare and tragedy through comedy / satire.
Yeah.
Has
with
split
a light
people.
Touch.
And Life is Beautiful is a great example. There are two sorts of people, those that love Life is Beautiful and those that hate Life is Beautiful and say you can't deal with horror and entertain people with that. You've got to be serious and respectful. And he feels that he needs to bring these messages to a new audience. And in order to do that, he feels he needs to deal with it in his way, with his style. And hopefully he does what you say is the ambition, which is to get through to people and make the world a better place.
Which is a very noble cause for a filmmaker. And I haven't seen the film yet, but it's on my list. And but the reviews I've read are just amazing.
Yeah.
And it's a great cast on it as well.
Amazing cast. Of course.
So I have one last question for you.
Yes.
Because you are very busy tonight. So you, in your interview with Shabbat Shalom Drive, which is a very interesting podcast, you said that you see one film a day, about 300 films around the world per year. How can you survive and have a life?
Well, Lindy just walked by, my wife and partner. Lindy also watches a lot of the films, so we do share the experience. And we cross-check a bit and we do some coverage together. But between us, we see the 300 films. And it's just part of our rhythm, I suppose, you know. You know, get up and go to yoga and have a fresh juice and watch a film. And, you know, have your work day and then go to sleep and start again. Watch another film and have another juice. It's part of the rhythm of life, I guess, part of our rhythm of life. And it's exciting and it's rewarding, and we hope we make choices that, you know, connect to people, with people, both Jewish and a wider general audience, because these are premiere films with value, I think, to anyone. And we hope we've done our job reasonably well.
I think the program of GIF definitely shows that. Thank you very much for your time, Eddie. It's
no
always
problem.
A pleasure to catch up with you. And GIF opens tonight in Sydney and runs until the 21st of November. And the festival also runs in Melbourne, Brisbane, Perth and Canberra. I've been talking to Eddie Tamir, the festival director of the Jewish International Film Festival, and I'm Christiana Palmieri for Fred Film Radio, the festival insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.